Cool. We're recording. We got some cool new intro sound effects. You guys aren't hearing it here because I haven't edited them in yet, but I've been working all day on like creating them and stuff. So we've got some slight tweaks to the theming this season as we go with the audio as we edit this together. In addition to, you know, obviously we have to do a whole new Patreon little interstitial there to thank our Patreon supporters up at the regimental patron level. If you're interested in supporting us, you know where to find the Patreon link. It's over on the front page of the site, probably where you're listening to this. Tonight, episode 2, season 12. We're all the way up to season 12. Mike is here, our usual semi-occasional co-host. Mike, how you doing, man?
I am here. I'm doing well.
Art, in fact, here. So you took the season premiere off, but you showed up for the second.
Oh, you know, you don't get invited. What do you do?
Well, there's that. Look, I had Rocky and Jim. Like, you know, it's not like you and I needed to say a whole lot.
I know. And Jim's got it out for me. I know. I get it.
There's that. Yeah. Jim doesn't associate with solo gamers.
I know.
He will associate with gamers who are beyond solitaire, like Liz. Well, how you doing, Liz?
Doing great. How are y'all?
That was a classic radio segue right there, man.
Yes.
That was all right. So, Liz, you are here because, like, we're gonna pepper you with questions tonight, and we're gonna make you as uncomfortable. No, we're not gonna make you uncomfortable. We're gonna have fun, have a chat, make some bad jokes, pick on some people, probably each other. But most importantly, while everybody out there knows you as the content creator behind Beyond Solitaire, I'm not sure where content creator like became a thing, right? You do video stuff, you do some writing stuff, you do some podcasting stuff. You're like a media person, but you are now a designer who is in the process of getting published. And like, we'll circle back around to the actual game and the design and the story and all behind that. But what's it feel like going from content media person to game designer? How'd that happen and what's going on here?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of media people do it. I mean, I'm definitely not the only one. Like, I've seen, you know, Ben Maddox for 5 Games for Doomsday showing off a prototype recently. You know, Roy Candidate from the Dice Tower did Last Light and also worked for the Dice Tower. I feel like it's not that abnormal, but I'm still surprised that I did it, if that makes sense. I used to say I'd never, ever design anything, and I had no intentions of designing anything. And then something just started to change, and I got curious about doing it, and David Thompson and I started to joke about doing it, and then we weren't joking. And then several 4:30 a.m. meetings later, Night Wishes was born.
Yeah.
and then it's like tribbles. It's like you start designing and then suddenly there's a bunch of designs. Like, I have a couple things I'm working on my own. David and I have now started our second game. I have something going on with my friend Paul about the Italian Wars.
So is this breaking news that you and David are working on another one?
Oh, we mentioned it on Twitter last week. Oh, so it's okay. Pretty new. Yeah, this is fresh. We don't even have a title.
I didn't know if I needed like the breaking news, a little horn break in.
Go for there, it. You know? It's the first time we've talked about it on anything other than Twitter. So yeah. Sure.
So wait, is this the original David Thompson or is this one of the many clones that he has to have to keep up the rate of production of his game designs?
Oh, no, this is definitely original David Thompson. The way that he doesn't have to clone himself. It's because he has all these like co-designers. So we're all just his partners in crime. And so he can spread himself thinner because we all like working with him. So
fair enough. David's a good dude. I like working with Dave. I don't design stuff. I just like get him to show up and show off his games.
So. David is a fantastic design partner because Night Witches is my first game. And it went, you know, just sort of like you can have a quarterback in a co-op game or something like that. You know, David is a perfect design partner because the game is truly 50-50. It's a really weird blend of both of us. And I like that a lot about it, actually. Like, it's to the point where there are certain things that I remember here I suggested, but the whole of the game has gotten where you can't, like, pick our sensibilities apart anymore.
That's borderline scary. I'm just saying. So you've gone from I don't really consider myself a war gamer to I'm now part of the committee that decides war game awards. And you've gone from, man, I'm never going to design anything to, hey, check it out. I've got like 4 irons in the fire.
Yeah, I don't know how this happens to me. I guess it's all just a natural progression. Actually, what's really funny is I didn't know what I wanted to write my dissertation about either. And then I ended up writing about monks. And I looked back at a book that I'd had in college. And it was about Gnosticism, which is what I originally thought I was interested in. And every single quotation in the book about monks had been underlined. And I was like, oh.
So it was right there in plain sight.
Totally, but I didn't see it. Yeah. It's easy to look at others, but it's very hard to see yourself.
Yeah, yeah. So Mike, when is your first design showing up?
Ha! Well, you know, it's funny. I think, and listening to Liz, I think you don't really plan on doing something like that. I don't think. Some people do, but not everybody. And for years, I've actually been collecting not a specific game design, but mechanics and certain things that I would like to put eventually maybe into some sort of game design. And I have a couple of games in the back of my mind that I kind of think about once in a while. But, you know, they're just seeds. I haven't even started doing it. I did ask David Thompson for help. He told me to go away. But other than that, I've done nothing on game design.
So again, were you talking to the original David or were you talking to one of the many clones? Because if it was a clone, I could see him telling you to go away.
It was a 4 of 12 in the clone series. So that could have been it.
Well, you know, they just degrade over time. What is that Michael Keaton clone movie? You know what I'm talking about? There we go.
Yeah.
Multiplicity. I've heard that title in decades.
You end up with a tie tied around your head walking around saying, I like pizza.
Yeah, you can't go too far down the line of clones or else it's not worth it.
It's funny because I actually kind of did mine in the right. I was doing design stuff before I actually, you know, got roped into doing content stuff on the wargaming side. I'd done some writing and reviewing in the RPG space back in the 90s. But when I showed up at my first Origins, I was in a vendor booth. I was there selling the original Warfighter games that I developed and was splitting the space with Neil from S2 Company because he had his Soldier Chess games that he was there selling. And so the two of us had the booth at Origins in 05, didn't have a clue what we were doing. Like, we took a total bath on the cost of being there because we were just trying to figure it out as we went. But that's when I first met Jim from Wargamer.com, and he got in touch with me about, well, hey, why don't you write the designer's notes for the game? And then it quickly turned into, hey, I got this game. You interested in reviewing? Hey, I've got some more games. You interested in reviewing? Suddenly I'm a staff writer for Wargamer. And they just reel you in. So I went the other way. I had the published design first and then got roped into, you know, covering other stuff. So I kind of did it the opposite direction.
Oh, that's funny. Actually, Mike, as a solo gamer, I have a theory about solo gamers, but I just want to see if you bear it out, which is that we like to play by ourselves, but we love to talk to other solo gamers about what we played afterwards. And that's why so many of us end up online. Is this true for you as well?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, it's I don't strictly play solitaire games. It's mostly solitaire. But yeah, maybe there is something to that. I mean, somebody was saying something about solitaire gamers and how they don't like to play with other people. And I'm like, look, I go to conventions. I'm out there.
I love to play with other people.
It's like, you know, it doesn't solitaire. Solo gaming doesn't necessarily mean you're playing strictly by yourself.
Well, no. So two things. First of all, Mike plays a lot of multiplayer games multi-handed. He's not playing solitaire design games. He's playing them solo.
Well, both. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, he'll play games multi-handed. The other problem Mike has is, you know, Liz, you and I live in relatively decent sized metropolitan areas. Mike lives out in East Bug Tussle, right?
I mean, that's true.
He's got more fish for neighbors than he has people. So
that's true.
I mean, that sounds really relaxing and delicious.
But that's not the only reason I mostly play solitaire. I mean, like, right, there's many reasons why you might want to play a solitaire game, and we don't want to derail this podcast. But you know, there's tons of reasons of why you'd want to play solitaire. But you know, I think, yeah, I do enjoy talking to other people who do play solitaire. That's true. I would agree with that statement.
So at this point, I can sign off and let the two of y'all take over the podcast. This is great. I love it.
Or we can ask you questions about your solitaire play, which I don't think we've ever done before.
Yeah. Do you ever play solo, Brent?
Yeah, actually, I do. I play a ton of Civ and some other stuff on the computers, but a lot of what I end up setting up in the office up here ends up being solitaire games, mainly because there's nowhere else for anybody to sit that if I invited them over to play, like I got literally nowhere for them to sit. but I did the big extended AAR on the White Tribe from White Dog Games. I just had the AAR not that long ago on Habsburg Eclipse, the new version that Tabletop Tycoon came out, where, you know, for folks that don't know, Tabletop Tycoon had bought a whole lot of Victory Point Games catalog, as well as the IP rights to the name and the company branding and logo and all that stuff. And they've re-released a couple of those Victory Point games in much snazzier versions. Part of Alan Emmerich's whole shtick with Victory Point Games was that it was a very do-it-yourself, print-on-demand kind of model. I'm not sure if they predate Blue Panther or if they were roughly contemporary, but But it was the same thing. You know, they when you place the orders, when they'd go hit print on the printer and start making copies of what it is you ordered. Well, Tabletop Tycoon has massively upgraded the components on a handful of them. And so there's the two States of Siege games for Ottoman Sunset and Habsburg Eclipse, because those are the two that you can also link to play one big game out of the whole thing. But they're States of Siege games, so they are inherently solo. And so I got the new copies of those that we had the unboxings of them back in the fall, and Habsburg Eclipse, they're both good games. I haven't played Ottoman Sunset in probably 8 or 9 years. Habsburg Eclipse I played through twice, you know, did the one just to make sure I was doing it right, and then the other one for the AAR on the site, and then I'm going to do the same thing with Ottoman Sunset here before too long. So nice. Yeah,
Have you played anything that's not designed strictly for solitaire? Like, would you play something like World at War 85 solitaire?
So I've done some like that, just kind of pushing counters around to make sure that I remember and understand how to do everything. I have a hard time where you can very easily flip the switch in your head to like play the different sides as competently as possible. I find myself picking favorites when I try to do that. And it's not as enjoyable when you realize, oh yeah, those guys are just a bunch of patsies out there to kind of shadow box with you and then fall over.
What? You don't think that that's fun? Just the easy victory?
There are times when, like, if I'm refamiliarizing myself with some mechanics for something, like I'm prepping for convention games, or I've got to teach something or whatever, or getting ready for, you know, our war game days that we have here in town, then that's fine. But like, if I'm just trying to, you know, if I'm really trying to dig into something and have a good time with it, I don't enjoy it as much when I do it like that.
Gotcha.
It's just not as much fun. I have found that the bots that they have for two-player games to be able to play them solo, like the bot for Shores of Tripoli, they're okay, but I still don't like them as much as purpose-designed solitaire games. If that's what I'm trying to play, if I'm trying to play a solitaire game, I want a solitaire game. So.
Interesting. To me, if you play it by yourself, it counts, but I think people who spend a whole lot of time playing games by themselves just kind of adjust to that.
Yeah. I'm not saying they don't count. I don't want to, you know, I'm not trying to throw shade on folks that have a good time playing multi-handed.
Scandal, everyone. Let's just, really did you all hear Brant? It's time to.
It's just not as much fun for me. So
we're playing.
I really have a hard time with the card driven ones where you've got hidden card hands. Like that's, you know, I really,
well, I mean, there's ways around that, but I think it goes back to, you know, why are you playing solitaire? What's your motivation? For me, it's more, I'm looking for two things. It's a story. So there's narrative and I'm also kind of looking for, you know, historical differences in what actually happened. And so when you play it that way, I hear what you're saying with, you know, you don't really want to, you want to be surprised by what the other guy's doing or what's in the other person's hand. But if you're playing it just to see what the historical difference might be if you change the outcome, or if you're creating a narrative story, I think that's where I have more fun playing a multi-handed solitaire game. Does that make sense?
No, it totally makes sense.
Why? Are they broken?
So Liz, when you were doing Night Witches, was it intended to be sort of that solo co-op design as you went in, or is that just how it evolved as you and David were working on it?
Oh no, that's definitely the intention going in. David and I wanted something. We're both big fans of the accessible solo war game. I think it's good for bringing people into the hobby. I think that it helps tempt regular and really quote mainstream solo players into that kind of war and historical space, which I absolutely have every intention of doing at all times. you know, it's just how David and I both, you know, enjoy a good solo game experience. And so we wanted Night Witches to kind of seamlessly flip between solo and co-op. So basically, for those of you who have not heard me talk about it before, Night Witches is a game about the 588th Night Bomber Regiment. They are all women, and they are Soviet women who flew harassment missions against the Nazis from 1942 to 45. So the game itself is basically a hex map with some objectives on it. There's several different missions that increase in difficulty with time. You get to upgrade with time, but there are two aircraft that represent a pilot and a navigator each. And so when you're playing, you can either control both planes, or one person controls one plane and the other person controls the other one. And so there's no actual rule changes between solo and co-op. It's just if you're solo, you're controlling both aircraft. And if you are co-op, each of you takes one. And I've found it to work well either way. But you know what's interesting is, you know, you're talking about different kinds of pushback from automated opponents and solo design. It's definitely designed for solo co-op in the sense that there isn't really an enemy that does anything. Everything is always your turn. It's just a different phase of your turn. So even if you are being fired at by AAA, it automatically fires at you, but you have to evade. And so even that step is on you and on what's coming out of, you know, you pull tokens from the quote success bag to see if you have succeeded at either a bombing attempt or an evasion attempt, depending on what you're doing at that phase of your turn. And so, you know, we made it so that it's always your turn and everything's really on you, so that you have to be thinking about yourself and your play the entire time. And there's basically no time where you have to worry about what the AI is going to do, because there really isn't any.
Yeah, there's not a lot of downtime in there. Mm-mm. Yeah, I know it's evolved a bit since then, but I did get a chance to play it with David. David showed two of us the game. We were playing co-op at Buckeye Game Fest last spring.
Oh, that's so coming up again soon, yeah?
Yes. Well, it's pushed back relative to where it had been in the calendar. So instead of happening late March, it's happening at the very end of April into May. So the War Room opens up like the 28th or 29th of April, whatever that Monday is. Like, I don't have a calendar right in front of me. The War Room opens up on Monday. Buckeye Game Fest itself starts on Thursday, which is like the 1st of May, I think. 1st or 2nd of May. But it's that first weekend in May is when the main part of BGF happens. Basically, what happened this spring is BGF and Circle DC kind of traded places for where they had been in the calendar last year.
Got it.
So Circle DC is a little earlier, BGF's a little later.
I am so excited for Circle DC.
Yeah, my intent was to go, but then we got picked for hosted media at Gamma again. So if Gamma wants to pay, if Gamma wants to pay for me to go attend the expo, I'm gonna let them. So I'm more than happy to go cover the expo on their dime and you know, enjoy all sorts of wacky game shenanigans with the industry folks there. But yeah, if Gamma Expo hadn't happened, then I was pushing hard to try and get to Circle DC. So
nice.
But Mike may end up doing both or neither. It depends.
Yeah. I got an email today from my eye doctor, and it was, your 7 appointments have been made. And I was like, Jesus, really?
7?
7. Well, I'm having cataract surgery, and they do one eye at a time. And for each eye, there's like a pre-appointment, and then there's the actual surgery, and then there's the post-appointment, and then there's the post-post appointment. So I'm just like, are you kidding me? Seriously?
And every one of those appointments lands on a game convention, doesn't it?
Yeah, I wanted to go with Brant to the Gamma thing, and then I wanted to do Circle DC. I wanted to go to Buckeye Game Fest because I missed it last year. So hoping I can still at least do Buckeye Game Fest and Origins.
So it sounds to me like your optometrist looked up upcoming gaming conventions and then deliberately.
Definitely not a gamer, right? Yeah. You're not a war gamer, are you? You're not a board gamer.
So Liz, as you guys have gone through the development of Night Witches, I know you and David are coming at this with different sensibilities. One, David's got a bunch of designs under his belt. This is your first. I don't know if you've ever sort of noodled around with designing something on the side that never really got this far, or if this was like your first actual design. This is just the first one I think any of us know about from you.
No, it's just the first actual design. I was okay. You know what? I'm gonna do it. And then
that's pretty cool.
I was very intentional about even our first conversation is on my podcast. It was with our historical consultant, Raina Pennington. We decided that we'd talk to her, kind of figure out where the game might be, and then meet afterwards officially and start planning it out.
Well, there you go. So
where did you come up with the idea for Night Witches?
David kind of had a running list of stuff he was interested in. We talked about maybe designing something together. He mentioned the Night Witches as a possible topic, and I went and looked them up and decided they sounded like a great topic. And then we talked about it a bit more. Yeah. And then before you knew it, we were like, take off. Let's do it.
Yeah, because you know, I was like, I haven't heard much about night witches, but I went and researched it and looked at it. And I was like, wow, this, yeah, it's like a, it's a, it's a neat topic, I think, to address. And I, it's going to be interesting to see the design. So you're going to have, you said it's solo co-op and it's two planes going out.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Can't do the, do the, are the planes, do they take damage? Is it?
Oh, yes.
Are you trying to keep your plane in the air as you're trying to reach these targets? Yeah.
So this
sounds like the perfect topic for a game. So.
Yeah, basically, on each turn, you move, you observe, because, you know, you're flying at night, you can't see everything around you all the time. And so you kind of have to fly into potentially bad situations and then pull from the bag to see what it is that you flew over and, like, what's around you. And then if you are in range of things that shoot, you have to pull tokens to see if you evade. If you don't, you're going to take damage. There's also three types of token in that bag. So there's success, where you just straight up get a success. Sometimes you need multiples in order to, you know, succeed at something, but, you know, you'll see. Sometimes you just straight up get a fail token. It's a failure. But then other ones are stress. And so you can choose to do things to mitigate your stress and turn those tokens into successes. But they always involve something terrible, like burning fuel. Or maybe you take one of the extra failure tokens that you start the mission with and put that into the discard pile, which then goes into the bag. So you, like, just put off your failures.
Interesting.
And, you know, if you're bombing, you can maybe drop an extra bomb if you have it, but then you've got fewer bombs to drop on other targets. And so, you know, we tried to make it just an endless trade-off of awful decisions all the time.
Like, which I can affirm is a series of awful decisions.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're, like, fun awful, but
well, yeah, whatever, I mean,
it's never easy.
It was a good time playing the game, but yes, it is a series of, you know, consecutive awful decisions.
So. I kind of feel like that's the essence of solo gaming, though. It's, I really enjoy games where if you don't win, you have reason to blame yourself, even if it was really bad luck. The sense of responsibility, I think, is what makes it stickier as a game.
That's fair. I could see that, because I mean, you could try to blame the dice if you want, but you know, you could have put yourself in a better position to roll, you know, to have better luck with the dice.
So. Yeah. And in this situation, you're pulling from a bag, you know, the combination of tokens in that bag once you figure out how to math it out. And so, I mean, part of it is just luck of the draw, but part of it is also, man, did I actually, like, make the right decision to come here? Did I use my skill cards correctly? Did I pick the right upgrades as I went? There's so many decisions that lead you.
Right, even open the box to this game, you know, those kinds of things.
But you just, I like to blame myself when I don't do well in a solo game, because it makes me feel like I have to play it and play better, as opposed to just like, as a dice checker, whatever. Like,
yeah, well, I think that's a tough tightrope for solo designers to walk. And I think there's a couple of different variations on the solo theme, like that States of Siege theme, where it's kind of, you know, it's tower defense, right? From any number of kinds of tower defense. Essentially, it's a tower defense thing where you're being pressed on multiple sides and you got to figure out how to allocate your resources. Like that's one way of doing things. One way is that you are just a dice chucker for the AI and it's very procedural, and whatever you roll, that's what happens next. And there's some of the air games like that. Some of the naval tower defense style games, like the Mike, what's the one with the Navy boats in World War II, like off Okinawa, trying to keep the Japanese air.
Give me a publisher. That, there's lots of those.
Yeah, I'm not remembering well. It's a naval game, so I'm not going to remember it all that well. But there's some of those. There's some that are choose your own adventure games with some dice involved, right? They're very narrative in the way that they're styled. And then there's some where there's a much broader decision space for the player as you're going through. And I think the way you guys have set up Night Witches, there's a lot of decision space in there for you as the map unfolds and reveals itself while you're flying over everything. And then you got to try and figure out how to survive it all.
That's the key. I remember we had Amabel on one of the podcasts, and she said the number one thing was, you know, are you making meaningful decisions? So
yeah,
in a solitaire game. And absolutely, that's what you want to do, right?
I mean, and this will be the plug that you can revisit that conversation next week on the podcast, because she's coming back next week.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Excellent. Amabel's awesome.
And when you start talking about the types of solitaire games, the one that popped in my mind was actually endurance. And that, you know, it's not a state to siege game, and you're making your decisions are extremely meaningful in that game.
The 12th season of Mentioned in Dispatches is made possible by all of our Patreon supporters who pledged at the top level. The Armchair Dragoons would like to thank Michael Sunborg, Fred and his dog, Chet Bell, Hellcat Six, Patrick Geraghty, Stagger Wing, Kevin Bertram, Mike Quigley, Martok, and Joseph Knoll for their support of the Regiment of Strategy Gaming, which helps us bring you the best strategy gaming articles, events, and this podcast. You can join us as a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/armchairdragoons.
Liz, what I was curious about with you and David, like, you know, this being your first real design, but David having done a bunch of different designs in the past, you're both bringing a variety of you know, experience and sensibility to this whole thing. But as you know, as we open up this whole conversation about going from sort of content media person into game design, how much, if at all, did any of that knowledge from the media side of things creep into what you might have been proposing from a game design perspective of, oh wow, this would be really cool to be able to talk about and explain, or I can't wait for certain reviewers to see this kind of mechanic and see what they think of it, or, you know, holy crap, I hope I don't get torn up by people about the way we're going to approach this thing. Did any of that ever really come into play? And if so, how?
Truly, no. I'm not worried about what anybody has to say about the game, because I really did it for myself. I'm a solo gamer because I'm selfish. Like, I mean, obviously I want other people to enjoy Night Witches, right? But Night Witches is a game that I made because I like it. I really like playing it. I still do, even after all this time. Like, I'm ready. You know, we handed it off to the artist, who, by the way, officially it's Ian O'Toole. I'm so happy.
Yeah, I saw the announcement online.
Whew. I'm just getting spoiled here, but I actually still enjoy demoing Night Witches. We demoed it for SD HisCon's online, like the winter quarters con, yep, like this past weekend. We still had a great time. So I made this game.
Yeah, that's because you blew us off for the ACDC. We got David to show up. We couldn't get you to show up.
What are you talking about? I was there that Friday.
I know. But David would have come back and done the rest of the weekend if you'd been there also.
Well, he was allowed. Using me as an excuse again. No, I'm kidding. You know, I think this is true for David too when he makes games. Like, we made a game that we actually really wanted to play and that we still enjoy playing. And
yeah, I think that's
for me, I think that's really, like, you know, just sort of like the essence of making something that you really care about. You can't be overly concerned with impressing other people. It's just like the clothes that you wear or the thing that you choose to do as your career or any of that. Like, you have to make choices that are for you and they're going to make you happy in order to be satisfied with the end result. So, like, do I hope that people like Night Witches? Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait until I'm scrolling through Instagram and I see, like, the first picture of somebody playing it in the wild. Like, I might shed a tear or something. Do I intend to read reviews of Night Witches? No. David will, but I won't. I sort of feel like that's the province of the reviewer and, like, the buyer, and, like, I want to keep that distance from my own work. I don't like looking at authors getting into it with reviewers on BookTube and on Goodreads, for example. I just think that people are allowed to have their little safe space where they discuss your game without worrying that you're going to show up and be like, excuse me, what did you have to say about my work? Like, no, I'm not going to do that. But I will say that some of my my media experience definitely played in the sense that I've reviewed so many games. I've spent so much time thinking about what I really like, what I don't like, what really kind of gets my engine going. And so that definitely played a role. You know, even though I hadn't designed a game before, I had a really strong set of ideas about what I do and do not like, and what I do and do not want players to experience in the game. And it made it a lot easier to have opinions about decision points as we came to them in the design.
I'm just envisioning you as Matt Dillon in Singles, you know, with flipping through the review of, okay, I only want to hear the good stuff. And, you know, flipping through like four pages to get to the very, you know, the last sentence of the review. And he was capably backed up by his band, you know.
No, I actually think of it more as, so, you know, I'm sure I've talked about this on here before. I always do. Like, you know, I studied ancient Christianity in grad school. And one of my favorite monk stories, and, like, I'll never be this. I think monks are fascinating because I'll never be this aesthetically perfect. However, there's a really great story where a monk asks his teacher, like, basically, how do I become better? How do I, you know, achieve piety? And the teacher tells him to go to the graveyard and spend the whole day insulting the dead. Just like talking a bunch of shit to a bunch of graves, you know, and like yelling at him, cursing him, saying the worst stuff. And he comes back and he's like, okay, I did it. And the monk is like, great. Go out tomorrow and then praise them. And so he goes back to the graveyard and he spends the whole day like praising the dead and telling them how wonderful they are and how well remembered they are. And he goes back and the master's like, okay, so, you know, what did the dead do when you insulted them? And he's like, well, nothing. What do they do when you praise them? Nothing. Exactly. That's how a monk should be. You know, I think that there's, I'll never be, you know, pure in that respect. I don't think anybody really is. But I do think there's some wisdom in that, right? That if I made something that I stand by and that I'm proud of and that, you know, I did it with David and we did it in a partnership that we're proud of, then I'm not too worried about it. Like, I said what I said and he said what he said and, you know, we did it together.
I think there's a ton of wisdom in that story, and I can't imagine myself ever behaving in that way. So,
what, you don't just go to graveyards and talk to them?
No, I can't. I can't imagine myself reacting the way the dead did. So,
yeah, right.
I am a very reactive person about things. So I know that about myself, and I can kind of live with it. So, I mean, I sort of have to, really, but yeah.
I mean, there's wisdom in that too, though. Like, if you have to know yourself, right? You know, and I also know that I do think that reading reviews, wondering if they would be good or bad, would stress me out, even if they were really positive. And I could spend all of that time and mental energy on my next game.
Yeah, I think you're just a better person than I am. I mean, I get that that's really a low bar to clear. Like, I'm totally on board with that as a reality. But yeah, you're just a better person than I am.
I don't know about that.
You've mentioned, you know, sort of, I'm absolutely going to avoid the reviews and like, I, you know, you don't want to be involved in people's reaction to your game. Cause like you said, like it's your game. You designed it for you. You're worried about your reaction to your game. But how much of that, if any of it, was also colored by other people's behavior you've seen online around people's reactions to reviews of their games?
Oh, probably a lot of it. Honestly, I will say it is a personal dislike of mine when designers get overly involved in discussing their work with critics of their games. It's something that I guess I just feel like once you release something out into the world, it is the right of the people who interact with your stuff to comment on it. And if that stresses you out or it upsets you, then you should, in general, leave it alone. I think there are exceptions. So if somebody's played it wrong and you need to do a rule correction, like I can see politely stepping in and saying, oh, by the way, you know, your experience might have been improved if blah, blah, blah. I guess if somebody says something that's just flat wrong, like a slander, maybe you say something. Maybe you just don't even give it any attention. I can't think of any examples of that, honestly. But after a certain point, you know, your stuff is out there for others to enjoy and discuss. And your role in that conversation is almost awkward because, you know, if you want reviewers to be free to review, if you want critics to be free to do their job, them knowing that you're like creeping on everything they make about your game is a little discomforting. And like, will I absolutely just say what I want anyway? Yes. Have I had to work myself up to just go ahead and let it fly? Also, yes. I do experience discomfort. I just do it anyway because I feel like in the name of honesty, like, are you a reviewer or are you not? Like, you gotta buck up. So
yeah. Yeah. I mean, your customer is the audience. Your customer is not the creators.
That's right. Yeah. If I want to talk to the creators, I would just interview them for my podcast. It's a different kind of conversation.
Yeah.
It's much more exploratory. That's one of the reasons I do not get into fights with people on my podcast. There are people that I disagree with, but I tend to kind of try to let them say what they want to say and let it stand because you don't get invited on. Like, my podcast is about having an interesting conversation. It's not about telling people what they have to say.
Yeah.
It's a really different vibe. It's why I like doing both things.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. So that, look, I think one of the other things is that if you're going to go through the trouble of having like an hour conversation with somebody on a podcast, you want it to be with somebody whose company you enjoy, not somebody you're going to fight with for an hour.
Yeah. I also just think that playing gotcha with people is kind of gross. Like, why would I do that? That makes no sense at all.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a couple of people I'm happy to play gotcha with online about, you know, oh, okay, you said this. Well, hey, how does that jive with this other thing that you previously said? So I'm more than happy doing that with people online, but I'm also more of a jerk than most folks. So
I just don't have the energy. I'm lazy.
I have other things to do than engage in that. Yeah.
I don't know. Mike's seen me get into it with a couple of people online over the years. So, you know,
I argue with teenagers all day. Like,
well, that's true. That's true. You do get your fill of that as it is with the day job. So I don't envy you that. Look, I get to argue with teenager all day, right? I've just got a daughter here. You get to
deal with that. She's probably already smarter than you too. Like, what did she say? She's like eighth grade.
Yes.
Man. She already is. She is smarter than him. I can vouch for that.
She's convinced she is.
She runs Origins. Have you been to Origins with us yet, Liz?
No, Liz keeps coming up with excuses like vacation to Portugal or some crap.
I know. Like, okay, so this summer I cannot go because I'm going to be freshly back from Portugal. I'm very excited. But then the next summer, I actually am hoping to go.
Columbus or Portugal. Gee, let's see. Which one do I want to do? Yeah.
Spend a long weekend playing war games with friends, or, you know, be stuck in a country full of foreigners where I don't speak the language.
Oh, I'll be okay. It is amazing how much you can do with like just a couple words in any language if you're a very expressive person. Like,
oh yeah,
my Italian is terrible. I spent 6 weeks in Rome, like at a summer school, and I made it through a significant number of situations with just posso, may I, and oh, mi dispiace, I'm sorry.
Okay, but let's also clarify or qualify this statement slightly with the fact that, like, you speak Latin, so, you know, you can probably wing it in half of Southern Europe.
You'd be surprised how many signs I can read. That is true.
Yeah. So, you know, let's not pretend that you're, you know, being thrown into a country full of Cyrillic letters or something. You know, I mean, you've got the Ur language that you can cover pretty nicely there. So.
Yeah, some of the words still work in Italy. It's pretty good. Like, salve still means hi.
Yeah.
It'll
see?
Do.
See, so you're fine. You're fine. You're going to get by fine. Just, you can't use Latin in Columbus.
I'm sure I could. I'm just not sure it would get me anywhere.
Big Latin, maybe, but regular Latin, maybe not so much. So. Right.
But no, I actually am hoping to come to Origins, not this summer, but the next.
Yeah.
Write that down.
No, Mike's going to be very interested in that because he's going to be in charge next year.
Ooh.
That way I can take you off. In charge of
Origins. Oh, okay. There's going to be some changes in Origins, people.
You'll be in charge of the War Game HQ. That way I can take a year off and just be a tourist. For
it is now a solo con. Mike, we will set up individual tables.
Everybody makes fun of a solo con. We should hold a solo convention. I still think we should.
Yeah, you can even just do it digitally where everybody like plays and then you have little coffee breaks or something. It'd be fun.
Yeah, and everybody would talk like you said before. Everybody would get together and talk and exchange ideas and have a great time.
Exactly.
Instead of a co-working space for people with home offices, be a co-playing space.
That'd be fun, actually. Yeah. Actually, one of the best things about my job right now is that my new neighbor who started this year is also a solo gamer and like hardcore. And so it's really nice to be able to just poke my head next door and talk about whatever we're playing because he absolutely knows what I'm talking about. And it's really, really nice.
By your neighbor, you're talking about your neighbor in
my classroom. I literally have an adjoining classroom with somebody else. And so it was another friend last year, but she switched to the English as a second language department. So we hired somebody new for Latin. And so now my neighbor is my friend Andrew, who actually I had met him on BGG in the one player forums before he ever applied to work where I am now. And so like we share both major parts of our lives. It's like really fun.
Huh. Interesting crossover there.
Actually, teacher gamers are really common and Latin teachers especially do like to game. It is very, very normal to find Latin teachers who like board games.
Yeah, teacher gamers, I'm not surprised by, but you're like the only Latin teacher I know.
But if you came to visit my school, you'd meet 5 people in one day, including me.
I'm going to be in Portugal that week. All right, so actual like game production discussion here. When are we gonna get our hands on production copies of Night Witches?
Oh God, that's a Kevin Bertram question. Okay, I will tell you, David and I did everything that we were supposed to do. All the files are made, all the component counts are done, the rule book has been edited. I have like maybe one more edit to make sure that tokens and counters are properly referred to throughout the rule book, and that's like it. And then it's up to Ian O'Toole, who is supposed to be working on stuff soon. Sometime in Q1. And then Kevin seems to believe that Night Witches will come to Kickstarter sometime in the summer and that we could see delivery as early as Christmas 2024. But let's be real, probably early 2025.
Is David bringing a copy to Origins?
Yes,
David is on the schedule for Origins.
Ah, okay. I've got to find David then.
For folks that are listening that are potentially interested in all of this for Origins, David is constrained on family schedule this year and is really only going to be at Origins for a day, maybe a day and a half at the most. So we've got two sessions of Night Witches on Saturday, I believe it is. I can't flip over and look at the calendar while we're recording because it's all on the same screen here. But he's got the two sessions of Night Witches, and then we've got him on one of the two Wargame Designer panels. He's on the one that's the same day that he's planning to be there. So we are putting him to use. We are getting our money's worth out of him, since we're not paying him anything. We are getting our money's worth out of him for the day that he's going to be there, but he is right now planning on only being there for the one day. So
and so Liz, if you could let David know, and I told Herman Luttman the same thing when he came to the Armchair Dragoons convention last October. When David gets to Origins, he needs to come to me with the games and check them in. I'll take them from him. I'll check them in and I'll hold them so he has access to them while we're in the Wargaming HQ area.
This sounds like a ploy.
No. It's quite serious.
We
treat security very seriously. At Origins.
Oh, man. Yeah, I really do want to go to Origins one of these days, though. In my current job, I'll also never make it to Gen Con, and we'll see how that all goes. Maybe someday.
I mean, it's you and 70,000 people at Gen Con. There's only so much fun you can have with that.
70,000 people worth.
Yeah.
No, actually, I prefer smaller cons. I'm really looking forward to Circle DC because it's so small. It's much more friendly. I think,
Mike, this is the part where you pitch Armchair Dragoons Fall Assembly.
I was sitting here thinking that was really small and that was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to be a little bigger this year. We're going to have a little bigger space this year.
And I understand that the first part, if you go to the war game part of Buckeye Game Fest, that's pretty small also, right? That's.
Yeah, because so BGF, for those that are familiar with Origins, it takes place down in the conference rooms that are next to the food court, where it's a bunch of RPG stuff that takes place there at Origins. For other conventions that people might be aware of, MarCon, it is usually mid to late May in Columbus. That's the Multiple Alternative Realities Convention, so it's a big sci-fi and literature convention. It's the same space where MarCon takes place as well. One of those rooms is the war room where guys will set up a couple of monster games and play all week. So they'll have a Labatt game going or an OCS game or something. So last year they had two Labatt games going side by side using two different Labatt rule sets, which is always fun, right? Let's get together and play a Labatt game. Fine. Which rules? Yeah. Because there's different ones. And then the Player's Aid guys kind of took over one into the building there and had, they had one of the big continent-wide ETO World War II games going. It wasn't Downfall because that wasn't out yet, but I don't remember which one it was. They had a Nations and Cannons RPG session. They had a Game of the Thing, based on the movie. They had, I want to say they had a Successors game. One night they had like four coin games going at once. So they do a whole bunch of different stuff. But the War Room opens early. That opens on Monday, where the rest of the convention doesn't open until Thursday evening. And then for the rest of the convention, there's one bigger game room that is pretty big. I mean, it holds 250 people pretty easily. They'll have one room that's just the Cabs library, which is the same library you get at Origins. If you go look up the Buckeye Game Fest articles on our site, they're linked down below this podcast episode, you can see the library room. I always have to take that photo as a panoramic to get the entire library in the photo. And they'll have a room set aside for some RPG stuff, and they usually have the Mike, what's the spaceship simulator? Artemis Bridge Simulator is usually set up in a room also, so you can go in and live about your Star Trek fantasies there. So they keep
pretty busy. My boyfriend would love that.
Yeah. What's cool about the Artemis Spaceship Bridge Simulator is they've got it set up to where you can play five or maybe six per side. And the guy's got two setups. So he can either play everybody on one side against an AI, or if you've got enough people, you can play head to head, which is kind of cool. And I don't know if they've got it set up to where you could do co-op and like two crews both on the same side. I don't know that anybody's ever tried. I think people just want to shoot at each other.
I'll ask him, Liz. So, Brant, can you do it solitaire? Or
Artemis, you can't do solo because part of the whole point of that one is
Boo.
You've got... You've got your comms guy, your science guy, your weapons guy, your helmsman, and all of them, everybody needs some piece of information that somebody else has. So like your weapons guy, in order to match the appropriate phase of laser you're shooting at your opponent, needs to know from the science guy what kinds of shields the other guy has, right? Your helmsman needs info from the comms guy about where he needs to go do stuff. And there's somebody in there that's, you know, managing your fuel and logistics load. And so if they've got to transfer fuel from or transfer power from the engines to the shields or from the engines to the lasers or whatever, everybody needs info from somebody else. So you're constantly kind of yelling at other people throughout the whole event. It's really cool. It's a lot of fun to do. A couple of years ago, there is some video from the one we did a couple of years ago where Gary got to be the ship captain and there were a couple of us in there. So folks that come to Origins will know who Lee is. He's the guy that does the monster games with Gary. He was part of that crew with us. But we've got a little bit of video from that, from one of those missions that we did that was pretty entertaining. We weren't very good at it.
That doesn't make it any less entertaining. That might make entertaining.
It probably makes it more entertaining. But fantastic. The big thing with the Artemis room at BGF, it's free. Like you just go get in line, and as long as there's seats available, they'll keep filling the seats in the room. At Origins, it's like an extra $10 per run to go through those things. So if you come to BGF, you can do it cheap. So.
Well, I'm hoping to go to Buckeye Game Fest. Like I said, I want to get to that first part of it where it's just the smaller wargaming area. And actually, I'm scheduled to run something for Buckeye Game Fest in the early part. So if you do happen to go, I don't know yet, but if you do happen to go to find me, just walk past the three Players Aid guys tables, walk past Gary Ardwolf's lair. He'll have two tables. Go down the hall in the back corner, and my own worst enemy will be back there with the car table, and I'll be running something. I don't know why yet.
Well, if you walk past the Players Aid guys, you're going to bump into a wall, because they always get across the back wall of the room and just sort of stay back there.
I'll be behind that wall. They'll have me in a closet somewhere, I'm sure.
Well, the reason Grant and Alexander set up where they do is that they will shoot a bunch of video while they're there. And so if they're up against the wall, then they've got that neutral backdrop behind them instead of a whole lot of motion going on behind them that's messing with the autofocus on the camera.
It sounds like I need to crash their videos.
Sure. Nothing stopping you except, you know, like eye surgery.
Well, he is his own worst enemy, so the only thing stopping him would be him.
It would be me. That's right. Exactly.
In Mike's defense, he is everyone's worst enemy. Liz, are you ready to spill the beans on one of the other designs you're working on, or not quite yet?
Oh, yeah, sure. So I'm working on some solo co-op stuff for Oath with Ricky Royal.
Okay.
So some potential Oath expansion material, but that's very much in development. I am making myself like a weird little solo CDG about Agrippina the Younger. She's Nero's mom. Basically, the first day he became emperor, his password was Optima Mater, like excellent mother, best mother. And within 5 years, Agrippina was dead because her son had her killed. And so I've been working on a game about attempting to hold on to political power while not allowing your relationship with your crappy child to degrade so badly that he murders you.
Maybe you shouldn't have raised a brat.
You know, she didn't fully have control over that because she attempted to murder her brother, possibly, or at least she was accused of it, who was the Emperor Caligula. And she ended up exiled for a couple years. And so, like, by the time she got back, Nero had already been, like, raised for an early part of his life by somebody else.
Yeah.
So she probably had a lot of mom guilt, actually, I would guess.
Or not, indeed.
This is not going anywhere anytime soon, but I would like to do a solo game about the Battle of Alesia. I think that'd be cool. It's a famous battle, but
there's 48 other war games already on Alesia.
But so. I want like a solo two front tower defense.
You know, Mike will tell you that any game is a solo game.
I will tell you that, yes.
Yes, but I have my own dreams for this. and then it's coin inspired. It might end up being irregular conflicts, but my friend Paul Wright and I are working on like an Italian Wars game that's testing out some of Machiavelli's ideas about whether a militia is better than a paid mercenary and whether forts are worth holding in the Italian Wars. And so basically it's going to be the major city states of Italy all trying to hold their own and gain territory and you know, basically become as preeminent as possible during a time where there's a bunch of encroachments from the French and the Spanish, the Swiss. So, you know, Italy was a hot mess during that whole era. So we're going to start with, like, 1492, the death of Lorenzo.
That whole era, you know, Italy being a hot mess during a particular era doesn't really narrow it down.
Yes, but if we go from 1492 to 1527 sack of Rome, that does narrow it down.
Yeah, that that is a useful set of parameters there. If it's just simply that era where Italy was a hot mess, man, we got several thousand years to mine there for
potential. Oh yeah, but so I've been doing a lot of Paul is an expert on Florence, so he's taking Florence and Venice and trying to kind of build out those factions, and I'm working on Naples and Milan right now. So I've been, like, reading a lot about Renaissance Naples and what was going on, and, you know, different French versus Spanish loyalties and all those different things. And then together we're going to figure out what to do with the Papal States when we're done. So that's what's up. It's, you know,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No.
I was gonna say, are these all going to be strictly solitaire games? Will there be any co-op in this, or is it just strictly solitaire?
So the Italian Wars game is competitive. It's going to be 4 to 5 players. And
okay.
So, you know, I think, like you said earlier, Mike, like, a lot of solo gamers, it's not all we do. It's just a lot of what we like to do. Like, my interest in games outstrips my ability to play them with other people. And so I became a solo gamer, like, as an adaptation to that reality. And now I just like it. But, you know, I like a game that can be a little mean too. And I think that, there are some games that even if they have a solo mode, they really should be played multiplayer for the proper experience.
Depending on what experience you're looking for. Yes.
Yeah. Like, for example, Land and Freedom. It has a solo bot, but why would you ever do that? It's a 3-player semi-cooperative game where the whole point is to get extremely pissed off at the other two people.
There is one reason, though, and that's the story narrative.
Oh, no. The story narrative is definitely based in getting extremely pissed off at the other two people. It's the game creates a tale of human selfishness and bad behavior in the face of, you're supposed to be dealing with fascism together, but no, like, somebody had to seek their own advantage and do something that, you know, it's like that rage is, like, part of the joy of the game, I would say. Like, I still get mad, jokingly, of course, at David for his performance as the communist at Circle DC last year where we first played it, because he was so selfish. What kind of redistribution was this?
Redistributing the points to himself.
Exactly. And then we all lost anyway, and I blame David. But then somebody else on Twitter made a similar accusation a few months later, and I had a good laugh about it.
We've all heard the adage of, you know, it's amazing what you can accomplish when nobody, when you're not worried about who gets the credit. Land and Freedom is sort of the proof of the inverse of that, right? It's amazing how little you can accomplish when everybody wants the credit.
Oh, yeah. But it's hilarious for that. It's, you know, I get a huge kick out of it. And, like, you know, you can't get mad at a bot in the same way as you can at a person. It's like, know that person knew and they deliberately screwed me over. God damn it. Like,
damn that David Thompson. But you can't stay mad at David that long, though. So there's that.
No, well, you really can't.
She's trying to design a game with him.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, actually, you know, I joke about this. Like, Night Witches was such a pleasant process. I'm like, where is this going to start to hurt?
When he watches the reviews and you don't, that's what
I'm saying. Oh, no, he can take that pain. But for me, I've joked about this before, but, you know, Night Witches is like having an easy first child, I guess. Like, I don't intend to have kids, but, you know, everybody says, like, oh, the first kid is so good, so it tempts you to have another one. I'm convinced Night Witches is just like the one that doesn't cry in restaurants and, like, potty trained itself.
That's the trap that's been set for you. Yes, the snare has been laid.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But, you know, honestly, I've really, really enjoyed kind of changing my relationship to board games over the last couple of years. So it's not just design. Like, I've also started doing editing work. So I've been editing the Elder Scrolls Betrayal of the Second Era stuff for Chip Theory. And it's been a really incredible process to watch things go from spreadsheets that are, you know, that still need to be smoothed out. And now, like, things are coming back from graphics and we're getting to, like, look over for, like, really tight, looking for typo, like, extra proofing. And it's really, really wonderful to watch something turn into something real in that way.
The way you check, like, typos is you read it back to front. You read it backwards, because then you're not worried about context. You're just looking at each word individually.
That's also how I found the satanic messages. No, I'm kidding. No. No, but one thing I'm really excited about with the Elder Scrolls game is that I can't wait to play it now, like for real, because I spend so much time editing, but I haven't really gotten to play it because I don't have access to a prototype. I'm not huge on playing something that big on Tabletop Simulator. And so, you know, that's been great. I did a proofing for Red Dust Rebellion for GMT recently, and that was really wonderful. It turns out that I really like being part of the process of like helping a game get out into the world, and it's really, really a fun shift.
Well, I can see this time I would love to have more time to do playtesting and things like that.
By fall assembly, I hope to have a playable prototype of the one Zachary and I are working on. And so by this time next year, maybe we'll have Liz editing for us. So
cool.
Let's see.
Maybe.
And I'll read it back to front. And that's how I'll discover time travel.
Liz, the satanic message is you got to hold it up in the mirror, not just like read the word.
Look, it's easy to talk to Satan, okay?
Well, yeah, when you speak Latin, yes, it is.
That is also the Lord's language. Thank you.
The rest of it's just sort of, you know, like we're mumbling Harry Potterisms and accidentally summon a demon, you know? You're doing it on purpose.
It's good times, I can tell you that.
It depends on which demon you summon, yes.
It's like the cartoon where the wizard's reading in cursive, and instead of how to summon a demon, it's how to summon a lemon, right? He's got the pentagram on the floor and the lemon pops up.
Brant, people do not write cursive or read cursive anymore, so no one's going to understand that joke.
I think it's funny you should note this. So my 21-year-old son is incapable of actually signing an autograph because he never learned cursive. My 13-year-old daughter is, because she taught herself cursive. She like had us buy her a cursive workbook at a store one time and has taught herself cursive, and then was writing things to turn in school in cursive, which the teachers were having trouble reading because many of the teachers didn't learn cursive when they were growing up, because they're all like 15, 20 years younger than me. And so my daughter could actually like write an autograph. Guess which one wants to be a star on Broadway and which one's perfectly content sort of, you know, playing video games and being a soccer coach. So, but yes, my daughter did actually teach herself cursive, which I find remarkable.
See, Liz, I told you she's smarter than dad. I told you.
You know, sometimes this is how it goes.
Again, we're talking a low bar to clear there, Mike. This isn't something you necessarily want to brag about.
Well, yeah, that's true. She's smarter than me, too, so I understand, Brant.
Sounds like she needs to take Latin. That's
She probably already knows it.
She knows Harry Potter Latin. I don't know.
It's a start. Some of that's really real.
She does a really good British accent, too, because she does the patron name reading for this podcast. And I asked Brant, I'm like, who's the British person you found to do this? And he's like, that's my daughter.
Yeah. The voice you hear doing the Patreon interstitials on the podcast is my daughter. Because she does a really good British accent. People keep asking me if I got one of Bob's kids to do it.
That's what I was thinking.
She had said she wanted to change up the voice for this year. We have not actually recorded the Patreon drop as we are recording this episode of the podcast. So the rest of the world's already heard it once on the season premiere, which I'm still finishing editing now, and we'll have heard it on this episode of the podcast, but as we are recording this, I have not yet heard which voice she intends to do for this. So it'll be a surprise for me as we are recording this, but it won't be a surprise by the time this gets released.
Yeah. So do y'all take breaks between seasons too? Season 8 for my podcast just launched today, so
he never gives us breaks. What are you talking about?
Yeah, so we run a spring season and a fall season. This is the spring season, and we'll take a break over the summer because of conventions and travel and everything else, and we'll take a break over the holidays because it's just too much of a headache to get everybody together for that. The holiday break is shorter than the summer break, but we end up roughly doing 24 to 26 episodes per year, so about it averages out to one every other week, but we cluster them into those two seasons where we're going weekly. We've had fairly regular for a couple of years. We did a summer special one like every year for three straight years or so. I say every year for three straight years. I mean, we're only 5 years old, so it's not like we've been doing this, you know, for the dreams for that long. But we did get some summer special ones in there based on some particular things that happened to be going on at the time that we recorded some special episodes for those. We did not do one this past year because we were busy doing a solo wargaming survey.
Hey, that was a fun survey. We should do it again.
We should. So my hope is that we've got that like ready to go a little sooner this summer so that we'd be talking about it at Origins. So.
Yeah. Well, now that we've laid the groundwork, I feel like that would actually be very doable. We had a system that worked.
Yes. Yeah, it did.
For our purposes anyway. And I'm actually really curious. I feel like a lot of people learned about the survey like as they saw us reporting about it. So I expect our results to be more robust next year and maybe a bit different depending on which populations decide to really get in there.
Yeah. And the new hotness falling, you know, out of favor and other new hotness appearing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Well, we're a little over an hour as we are recording this. By the time we edit out all of me saying and then, you know, Liz giggling, we'll probably be down to about, I don't know, 38 minutes or so. No, I'm kidding. but yes, we
somebody's
are
gonna laugh at your jokes, we're recording
this. It'll be a little less by the time we by the time I finish editing. But we're getting dangerously close to Liz's bedtime and I'm going to head back into the house and go hang out with my wife. So Mike,
and you're past my bedtime
pipe to repair.
Oh yeah. We're past mine too. Mine was 20 minutes ago.
So, audience, thank you for joining us for episode 2 here on season 12. Mike, thank you for finally attending to your co-hostly duties. You'll be back plenty this season because we've got a whole bunch of different stuff lined up, including we're going to go not live, but we're going to record whoever we can flag down at Gamma Expo. If you could make it, you could join those because I'm just going to like walk around and flag down random industry people and get them on, you know, get them on the recording there.
I'm going to miss all that. I won't be able to see them anyway. So,
yeah, well, there's that. You don't need to see them to talk to them. We got cameras off. We're fine. So, Liz, thank you for squeezing us into the schedule here. We really appreciate it and hoping for the best for Night Witches and that by the, you know, we'll have you on a show again before Night Witches shows up, but it'd be nice to, you know, shove it under some people's Christmas trees this year if we can do it.
Let us hope. And yeah, thanks for having me on. It's always fun to just hang out with y'all. I appreciate it.
Yeah, just yell at Kevin to get Night Witches printed faster.
Yeah, faster, faster.
Because that works.
Well, yeah.
I'm just waiting for the glow up right now. Ian O'Toole can take his time. I just can't wait to see. Like, it's like, you know, we packed the kid off to boarding school or something, and they're going to just come back having glowed up.
We shall see. We shall see. All right. Audience, have a beautiful evening. Thanks you for joining us, and we'll catch you next time on another episode of Mentioned in Dispatches.